we present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Yorkshire Post, read by Catriona Young.
A juror who arrived wearing combat trousers, bullet belts across his chest, fingerless gloves, a mobile phone, and a television aerial and filofax dangling from his waist was dismissed from the Old Bailey for refusing to take his hat off in court.
Well, thank you, Michael Robinson of Huddersfield, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you please welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams, and with him the editor of Private Eye, Ian Hislop. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran, with comedian, writer and producer of the successful TV series Drop the Dead Donkey, Andy Hamilton. Now, before we start round one, here's a cutting from the London Evening Standard.
A roll of lavatory paper was the only thing reported stolen from a break-in at a house in Hillingdon. Police think the intruder fled after being disturbed.
Mind boggles. Richard, as usual, the first question is for you. Why is frozen food making a comeback?
I think it was the discovery of the Minister of Food, Mr. Nicholas Soames, who's quite very ancient. And very enormous joint of meat discovered at the Daily Telegraph, where he was invited to adjudicate on which had the tastiest flavour, this new type of beef, or the oldie beef. And he said the oldie beef was the best.
When I saw the photo, I thought he was probably trying to eat Gummer's daughter.
Anyway, this is the news that six-year-old surplus EC beef is on sale, although it's only really intended for pies and pasties. Now, that is news. There's meant to be meat in pies and pasties. This frozen meat is, of course, the result of excessive production, or the European beef mountain, and it was tested for safety by Nicholas Soames, the European lard mountain. He tried a sample of the 20,000 tonnes, about half of it, actually, and declared it the tastiest starter he'd had all day. Ian, your proper question now. Where do two-thirds pray their children will find faith?
Is this a school survey?
It is.
Parents asked about school assembly? They all want prayers at assembly.
That's right.
Two-thirds of them.
Even though they don't believe in that sort of thing at home?
Yes.
They want to have it at school.
Sort of passive praying at a distance.
And readings from the satanic verses, I think.
It was a survey that revealed that two-thirds of parents want schools to start teaching religion again, while the others thought it might be a good idea if churches started teaching it first. The majority of parents felt it was right for prayers to be said at school at the appropriate time, like when they need new books or pencils or Our teachers find the easiest way to get kids down on their knees praying to heaven is to run through the national curriculum. Andy, welcome back to the show. Who got a wrong number between 10 and 11?
Yes, this is the story about a BBC journalist
yes.
who was ringing number 10, and he heard John Major, he got across the line, it was John Major talking to Kenneth Clark, presumably about how they were going to duff the bastards up at the cabinet meeting between them.
I thought it was just some bloke who thought he'd got the wrong number. He rang up the Prime Minister and this twit answered.
Hello.
Yes, it was all about reporter Adam Minot. Adam Minot of the BBC's Today programme, who rang number 10 Downing Street, only to find himself on a crossed line with the Prime Minister. Mr. Minot was very excited. For one moment, he thought he'd got the speaking clock. At the first stroke, my latest policy will be... precisely. Alan, will you please listen to this?
One through a party in the county jail.
That was, of course, Jailhouse Rock by Elvis Presley. And your question, Alan, is, where was stir so lax it caused the lags to stir?
It's about the prison riot.
Yes.
They came up with this prison that was going to answer all the Howard League complaints. And everybody could stay in bed and have colour telly and snooker. And their own keys. It was actually their own keys. And these little estates they lived in. It was like... It sounds like a television soap opera. They lived in these little houses, and they decided they didn't like this very much, and they broke it. They spent the entire weekend breaking it, and there were pictures of lavatories that had been dismembered and all the rest of it. It's gone. Try to be quiet, because I can see.
Do you remember they were all fascinated?
Basically, there were seven screws and something like 800 prisoners. And we're supposed to assume this is quite adequate, because if these blokes have their own keys, they can lock themselves in and out. And what they did, they congressed and broke the place.
These were the riots at Wymott Jail, which was said by a recent Toomin report to resemble a British holiday camp. So no wonder they smashed the place up. Before the riot, inmates unlocked their own cells, you so rightly say, and not forgetting to unplug the CD player and set the answer phone, set about dismantling the internal wall using a toolkit smuggled in inside a package of cannabis. Eventually, 400 riot police arrived and let themselves in by using the key on a piece of string hanging inside the letter. Oh, and the scores at the end of the first round are unbelievably for all. We start round two with an item from the TV listings page of the Cleveland Herald and Post. See if you can spot the misprint.
Emmerdale Farm, 7 o'clock. More drama set in the beautiful surroundings of the Yorkshire Dales. Elizabeth makes a puzzling discovery while Annie's actions shock her sons. At Home Farm, Zoe blames Frank for Archie's arrest, and Christ continues to plot against his father.
Thank you, Catriona, and thank you, Mrs. M. Wilson of Cleveland, for sending us that. Richard, your turn again. Who enigmatically missed the launch of a lifetime?
I think this is the Prime Minister again.
It is.
Who was engaged in something called a charm offensive this week. We're aware. Well, that was why he missed this launch of this book by a former Private Eye contributor, Miss Penny Junor, who produced a book called The Enigma.
That's right.
Major.
I love the idea that Major's an enigma. Apart from how did he get the job? Seem to be many unanswered questions.
Is it a misprint for enema?
It is the enigmatic John Major, who was represented at the launch of his biography by a realistic cardboard cutout. In fact, it was frighteningly realistic, as it failed to make any decisions and everyone ignored it. The biography is lavishly illustrated in black and grey, or as the Prime Minister calls it, full colour. Now, Ian, it's your turn. Who checked in at the audition?
Maxwell the Musical.
That's right.
Good yeah, grief. Yeah.
He's small, but he's clever.
There was a queue of Maxwell lookalikes.
That's right.
Headed by Nicholas Soames, presumably. Well, this is a story about people going to audition for a musical about Maxwell's life.
Exactly so. Exactly so. It's no more
than Maxwell the Enigma.
This question is all about Robert Maxwell lookalikes who auditioned for a new musical based on the disgraced tycoon. Yes, it's called The Crook and I. Some of the rotund wannabes arrive draped in seaweed when it pays to go overboard when you're a Maxwell impersonator. The show uses Gilbert and Sullivan tunes with new lyrics such as I am the very model of a modern megalomaniac. Amazingly, the future of the musical looks assured. Yes, watch out, folks. This one could float and float. Andy, will you listen to this? Sorry.
That's what they call rap music.
That was the delightful ballad I Will Always Love You, sung more or less by Whitney Houston. And your question is, Andy, what love song fell upon deaf ears eventually?
This was the story of a person who played this song incessantly at very high volume, and their neighbours took them to court, and perhaps rather startlingly, they were sent to jail, which I think is very unfair, because surely it's Whitney Houston who should go to jail. Basic cause of the offence is Whitney's, isn't it?
This is all about Helen Stevens, who was jailed for 7 days after a court heard how she subjected her neighbours to a 6-week barrage of I Will Always Love You, the ballad by Whitney Houston, the well-known vocalist and jet engine. Such was the volume that workmen using a hydraulic sledgehammer could sing along with the words. Miss Stevens, or as she's known next door, Pardon, played the song as a tribute to its writer, Dolly Parton, the statuesque star best remembered for a couple of biggies in the 70s. Alan, your question is this. Where is Mail Order Royally taking the Michael?
The Michael is Prince Michael. No, it's Prince Michael of Kent.
Yes.
Selling old rubbish, possibly Princess Michael of Kent, to America. In my paper, she wasn't involved. I mean, he's got lashed up with his mail order company that's selling old potties and jars of jam and stuff, called the Windsor Collection. Ghastly.
It's all fire damaged, apparently.
Queen's got... I had a fire damage joke around about there. But I was going to take a run at it. But it doesn't...
This is the further commercialisation of the royal family with the launch of a mail order catalogue called the House of Windsor. The products are, in addition to the existing range of royal mugs, who can be seen queuing outside Buckingham Palace, royal goods will be marketed in America by Princess Michael of Kent, or to give her her full official title at the palace, Her Royal Highness the Pushy Kraut. The intention of the catalogue's promoters is to target wealthy Americans who love British royalty. So far, the mailing list consists of a Texas oil man and a bald financier.
Germans are our partners in Europe. We can't upset them by reminding them of their association.
Well, I can't make
Princess
up whether Princess Michael of Kent. I can't make out whether Princess Michael of Kent is Austrian or Australian, because she seems to be both at one time or another. Do you know?
No, no. Her father was with the Australian SS.
Yes, righto. I'll give you the
every
scores.
Every Saturday, they take Rolf Harris out and burn him.
Well, there'd be much to be commended, then, in that case.
They weren't all bad, and very good at their parents.
Well, that brings us to the end of that round, and not before time. The scores are still tied at 8-8. We start round 3 with an item from the Lowestoft Journal.
Thieves have stolen a concrete wishing well with a red-tiled roof from a back garden in Notley Road, Lowestoft. The police said they were looking into it.
Well, thank you, Tony Peck from Brundle in Norfolk, for that. Richard, what songbird has gone for a song?
Is it the lesser-spotted thrush?
It is.
I thought it was.
I saw this in the Telegraph. Yeah. There's usually stories about thrush are in the Guardian.
I don't know if you remember when Bill Deeds was on last.
Yeah.
He was going on about magpies.
Were you?
Yes. Magpies. We remember Menish. And this has now been confirmed by reports that the magpies are gaining ground at the expense of of our old friend the thrush.
Do they eat them?
They eat
the
young, they eat the eggs.
Sing the same song day and night till the magpies go round.
The answer is all about the thrush, it's your kind, right? This is the common song thrush, Latin name Vulgaris Elaine Pagium. It's fast disappearing from British gardens, especially if the only song it can carry is I Will Always Love You. For the first time, the thrush has failed to appear in a list of the top 12 species observed. Indeed, it is so rare that the ones which are spotted can be seen polishing up on their dodo impersonation. Ian, here's a piece of music for you.
I think I listened to that non-stop as an adolescent.
Yeah. Well, as you know, then, it was Je T'aime, sung by Serge Gainsbourg
and Jane Birkin.
Right.
Were you sent to prison for playing that part?
And your question is, Ian...
for listening it at our school.
Your question, Ian, Who won an award from the one who runs a ward or two? Assuming that the latter is Virginia Bottomley, who is the former?
Can't imagine Jane Birkin got anything from Virginia Bottomley.
She's jolly nice, Jane Birkin. You know, I met her not so long ago.
Did you?
Oh, that is interesting.
Yes. I thought she was very charming.
My friend can cut this rubbish short with a word, sir.
Good.
Hit it.
What?
Tell him.
Oh, yes. Virginia Bottomley presented an award to Anne Summers, who ran a sex shop, apparently. I've never heard of it myself. And for being Businesswoman of the Year or something like that, or Thrusting Businesswoman of the Year. And
one swallow doesn't make Anne Summers.
Well, it is the Anne Summers sex shop chain, whose boss, Jacqueline Gold, is to be presented with an award by Virginia Bottomley. Miss Gold also runs the Anne Summers party, where small groups sit around giggling and fantasising about their boyfriends. In my day, that used to be called the Liberal Party. To avoid embarrassment, Mrs. Bottomley has agreed to present the award in a large brown paper bag. Agreed to put it over her head to avoid embarrassing Miss Gold. Andy, you did so well with that. Here's your proper question now. Where is the emergency number available on a plate?
Is this about this personalised number plate?
Yes.
Oh, it's just an extraordinary story about, you know, under the new privatised NHS, where they're all independent trusts, that an ambulance service that has gone private lavished about 90 quid on a personalised number plate for one of their ambulances. Called something like, you know, Dead One or something. And I think some people questioned whether this was a good use of money.
Very good. This does refer to the Northumberland Ambulance Service, who bought a personalised number plate for their new ambulance. This is all part of a marketing campaign designed to encourage the public to make more use of their service, presumably by annoying them into bursting blood vessels. The ambulance service deny the number is a yuppie-style extravagance, as it cost only £120 to fit on their new high-speed response vehicle, a Porsche 911 Turbo, with leather interior and an electric sunroof. Alan, your turn again. Who received a frosty reception after a belated return home?
It's not the parrot. The frozen parrot.
Not the frozen parrot.
Oh, hell, I love the frozen parrot.
Talk about the frozen parrot.
Tell us the frozen parrot, then I'll give you the answer to this one.
A man called Mark Jones, who is suing the Central Electricity Generating Board after a power cut, because he had his parrot in the freezer. He's a parrot he loved. And when it died, he wanted to have it stuffed. And the taxidermist was on holiday, so he put the parrot... Meanwhile, up at the power station, they said, oh, well, not too much, and they pulled this, and the parrot began to decompose. There's not a lot of stuff now. I mean, anyway, a frosty reception after... I mean, someone was shoved in the fridge. I mean, it's a family row, is it?
No, it's the Philippines.
Oh, it's not Marcos?
Yeah.
Oh, President Parrot of the Philippines. Right, well, he died, and his wife wanted him stuffed. The Philippine government said over our dead body, or worse to that effect, because they didn't want him to come back because he might have become a focus for attention. He might have become a hero, and they might have voted for him.
Anyway, this refers to the frozen remains of Ferdinand Marcos, which were flown to the Philippines from Honolulu aboard flight BJAM-1. The decision to allow the ex-dictator's remains back into the country for burial was welcomed by his widow, Imelda, who felt the time was right for a thaw in relations. The scores at the end of the third round have taken a slight turn for the better, because although Richard and Ian have got a well-earned 10, Alan and Andy have scored an even better 11. Before we start the final round, the following was spotted in The Independent on Sunday.
The truancy issue is one more problem in the bulging in-tray which will confront John Patton, Secretary of State for Education, when he returns to work tomorrow after his gastric illness. Mr. Patton is said by officials to be full of beans.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lawrence Upton of Harlow, Essex, for sending us that. Richard, here's your piece of music.
The kind I like to meet, pretty woman.
Well, that was Pretty Woman, sung by Roy Orbison. And your question is, Richard, which Pretty Woman's husband is as good as Abe L?
Is he talking about?
Abel, if you know the answer, then it will make
sense. No, it's not sense. Mrs. Bottomley, just for a change. I believe the pretty woman referred to is a Miss Julia Roberts.
Quite right.
A thespian resident in Hollywood. She's famous largely for appearing as a prostitute in a film.
I see. Very interesting. Will you continue, please?
She then decided to marry one Kiefer Sutherland.
Yes. Yes.
Another thespian resident in the same town.
I'm making notes of all this.
Later, she failed to marry him for reasons I cannot remember. And now she's married someone else. And we really don't care.
Yes, this is all about Hollywood star Julia Roberts, who revealed she married country singer Lyle Lovett because he's just like Abraham Lincoln, about whom she had a mad childhood crush. In fact, this is quite a common occurrence. Apparently, when Norma Major was at school, she was mad about brains out of Thunderbirds. Julia still fantasizes about her hero with Lyle, who doesn't mind being tucked up in bed wearing a false beard and a stovepipe hat, but draws the line at going out to the theatre with her. That's the top and bottom of that. Ian, your question. What could become a thorn in the wrong side of the law?
This is a story about rose bushes.
Berberis is the plant concerned.
Right. Yeah.
This is Inspector Knacker's desperate attempt to to stop burglars. Is you plant thorny bushes outside your front door so that nobody can get in.
If the hedge is round the house, there's got to be some way for people in the house to get out. Then they'll go in through that, won't they?
Yes, we're right. Very grateful that you have pointed this out, Mr.
So what happens? You ring them up and say, I've had burglars, and they give you a cutting, do they?
This is the despite of everything to the contrary, this is the recommendation by police in Essex that the best way to safeguard property is to move to Suffolk. Or failing that, to grow thorny shrubs all round your house. The plants take up to 4 years to grow large enough to be of any use, so they're not only more effective, they're also a lot quicker than the police. They say £100 worth of holly and berberis should do the trick, which has led to an immediate outbreak of thefts from garden centres. Andy, what intercity sizzlers were shunted into the sidings?
Is it about Maidstone Station being relocated by a drunk train driver? No.
It's about nude pin-ups, actually.
Eh?
Nude pin-ups?
Oh, no, how distasteful.
Yes, 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 it's all coming right
on. Here comes Richard Ingrams to the rescue.
We apologise for the late arrival of Mr. Ingrams' answer. He was delayed by brain failure.
Indeed. But it's only half an answer. But somebody, and I see in the dim recesses of my mind, has objected to a lot of nude pin-ups being put up in the waiting room.
Yes.
And that's right, it was a calendar, wasn't it? So you could tick off the months you were waiting.
Is it safe to give you the answer? It's the British Rail station manager in Newcastle who closed an exhibition in his buffet because it included nude photographs, much to the disgruntlement of his customers. Yes, it was the only fresh sauce they'd had in the buffet for years. The exhibition of nudes on Platform 3 has been cancelled due to frozen points caused by the wrong type of fig leaves. Alan, who made a monkey out of the market?
There's a chimpanzee in Sweden called Ola. And the Swedes, because there's not a lot else to do in the long Swedish nights, gave it 5 darts and a copy of the Financial Times. And it threw these darts, which hit a number of companies listed in the pages, and they then invested in it. Those who invested did much better than anybody who followed the financial advisors. This student turns out to be much smarter than any other financial advisor. God help it if Fergie ever finds out.
Absolutely right, in every particular. 2 points, well earned. Terrific. Now, we've more or less come to the end, but before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard, have you got a cutting from us?
Yes, something from my own patch, Reading, you remember. Oh. Reading is where I live. They have this awful pop festival there every year. Anyway, this is an account of this. It says, fans were disappointed to learn that the controversial Jim Rose Circus pulled out. The show, which boasts acts where performers swallow swords, eat razor blades, pierce their bodies with knitting needles, slash their skin and ingest light bulbs, gave no reason for their last-minute withdrawal. However, a spokesman for the organisers blamed an upset stomach for the cancellation.
Very good. Ian?
This was a cutting from The Guardian about a library in Bendigo in Australia, which held an amnesty for overdue books. A woman handed in three she should have returned over a year previously. Total Recall, The Memory Book, and Use Your Perfect Memory.
Andy?
Well, this appeared in The Big Issue, and it's English copy from a car rental brochure in Japan. And it says, when passenger or foot heave in sight, tootle the horn. Trumpet him melodiously at first, but if he still obstacles your passage, then tootle him with vigour. Rather lyrical, really. Stanley Unwin.
Yes. Alan.
I have one, Barry, from Thursday's Daily Telegraph. His animal lovers broke into a car in Wangari, New Zealand, to rescue a dog locked in the back. It was a stuffed dog put there to deter people from breaking into the car.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores, which are Andy and Alan, 13, but Richard and Ian in the lead, and this week's winners with 14. I couldn't believe it either. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Bath Evening Chronicle, sent in by Mr. John Gibbon.
Mr. Graham Barrett, the landlord of the Griffin Inn in Monmouth Street, Bath, has received a letter of commendation from the fire brigade. It follows an incident last month when Mr. Barrett rescued one of his regulars, Mr. Sidney Ferris, from his blazing flat in Rosewell Court. Mr. Barrett said, "We broke down the door and I made my way through the smoke. I could just about make out Sid lying unconscious on the sofa in the living room. I picked him up and hung him over the banisters to get some air. I'm surprised to receive this recognition. I only did what anyone would have done. And anyway, in these times of recession, you've got to keep the regulars."
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news booth were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corrin, Ian Hislop and Andy Hamilton. The chairman was Barry Took and the cuttings were read by me, Katrina Young. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was John Naismith.